Application Academy is closing if you are applying to medical school in 2024 to start in 2025. We are closing in mid-April, April 12th or 13th, somewhere around there, somewhere in mid-April. We're closing our door. It's time for you to get in to Application Academy to get the support you need to put together your story so that you aren't one of those students that end up rejected because you didn't know how to tell your story. Come join us at applicationacademy.com. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. Use the promo code podcast for a little extra discount. I'll see you soon at applicationacademy.com. The pre-med path can be super confusing. If you'd love some help on your path or on your applications, use the promo code PMY for pre-med years, PMY, over at medicalschoolhq.net and get some help from some of our experts, former directors of admissions, admissions officers, other experts. We have a small team ready to help you today. Again, that's promo code PMY to get a discount on our services at medicalschoolhq.net. If you're applying to medical school in 2022 to start medical school in 2023, join me Wednesday or Thursday, Wednesday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern or Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern at premedworkshop.com. Go register today. I'm going to show you how to tell your story in your application. Again, that's premedworkshop.com. If you are applying to medical school in 2022, be there or be square. You're listening to the Medical School HQ podcast online at medicalschoolhq.net. Session number 9. Hello and welcome back to another session here at the Medical School HQ podcast. I am your host, Ryan Gray, and we are the podcast about medical school. From the pre-med process through residency, we hope to take your knowledge of becoming a physician to the next level. In today's episode, I have a great interview for you. Yeah, you might already know this person. His name is Ryan, and he is a blogger and a first-year medical student. He blogs at practicalpremed.com, which is his old blog. He's got a ton of great information there. But now he's a first-year medical student, so now he blogs at whitecoatdo.com. As you can tell by the name, he is an osteopathic medical school. I'll leave some suspense and let him tell you where he is right now in the interview. But first, I have a question that I want to read to you. An email was sent in through the website at medicalschoolhq.net. And it says, "Hi, Dr. Gray. First of all, I absolutely love the podcast." It goes on to compliment me some more. I always appreciate those kind of emails. And then it says, "I'd like to know your opinion on studying medicine abroad and then practicing in the USA. I am a post-baccalaureate pre-med student from New Jersey and am considering studying medicine at a foreign medical school. I would especially like to study in Argentina at the University of Buenos Aires or Cordoba, which are among the leaders in South America." And it says, "Public education in Argentina is also free to all, and that's a big incentive for me since I am broke! Exclamation point. Will my credentials easily transfer to America? Do I just have to prove I went to medical school and then take a licensing exam?" So, thank you for that email. And this is definitely a topic for another day. It's a huge topic, going to medical school outside of the U.S. But my advice, I emailed him back, and my advice to him was in no way should going to a foreign medical school be a first choice. It's not to say that the medical education he's going to get is any less, but to come back into the U.S. and to do a residency is very, very hard. You have to be at the top of your game, much more so than if you would have gone to
a medical school here in the States, you have to be that much better than everybody else. You have to be the top 1% of board exam scores. You have to just be a tremendous student. And it really sets you back to be a foreign medical grad, an FMG, as we call them. Like I said, a topic for another podcast. We can get some experts in here to talk to us about that whole process. But the short answer is don't worry about the money. Thousands of students every year graduate with tons of debt and they pay it off. Being a physician doesn't make you rich anymore, depending on your specialty. Some do, maybe. But the fear of debt should not make you want to run to another country where the education is free. Stay here, get into a good school, go to a state school where it's cheaper, and go from there. Obviously, you'll have to pinch some pennies during medical school. Take out the loans that you need. Don't go crazy. Live like a student now so that you can live like a doctor later. Don't live like a doctor now and live like a student later is a quote. I forget where I heard that from, but anyway, that was my advice. And like I said, we'll get to that topic in a future podcast. But on to the main event here today. We will jump into the interview with Ryan. I asked Ryan where he was in medical school.
Yeah, so I just finished the first semester at Western University, the College of Osteopathic Medicine of the Pacific. It's in Pomona, California, which is in Southern California. So I just finished that. It was, like I said, a big lesson in growth and in transition and learning to adjust to the volume and the pace of medical school. Definitely there's a huge contrast between your time management in between undergrad and medical school, just because at UC Santa Barbara, where I went for undergrad, we would cover about 30 to 40 hours of lecture over a span of about 10 weeks. And now we've taken that same amount of material, about 30 to 40 hours, and they cram it down into 2 weeks. And so, you know, before I got to medical school, people would tell me, you're going to be studying about 6 to 8 hours a day on like light days. And I thought that was ridiculous. I thought there was no way anyone could study that much. And now 6 to 8 hours is just light days. And now that I'm in it, I understand, like, you have to keep up. Like, if you study only 3 to 4 hour days in undergrad were like big accomplishments for me. And now those are just, you do those are like super easy days.
Yeah. So that's one of the biggest transition points for most people, is realizing the overload of studying that there is. And until you're actually in it, you have no clue.
Yeah, definitely. I had physicians who told me that, and I thought they're all crazy. They said, you know, you have to go to all these classes, and then on top of that, you have to do that. And, you know, the first couple of weeks, there's definitely times where I looked at the schedule and I didn't think it was humanly possible for me to get through it. And there's times when I definitely was doubting if I'd be able to learn everything to the level that they expect you to for an exam. But if I can make it through a first semester, then anyone else can.
So I want to kind of jump on something that's in the news right now. With the amount of studying that you see is needed and the amount of material that they're teaching, NYU is coming out saying, hey, we're going to start offering select students 3-year medical school. I, for one, thought with the amount of material that there is these days, I mean, with the amount of data that we have, the new research that we have, the sheer volume of data that we have compared to 20 years ago, it's exponentially large. And yeah. I think med school should be 5 years. 3 years is, it seems ridiculous. And Let me hear what you want to say about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually read that piece that came out, and I was surprised that they're doing that, because I definitely, after this first semester, I studied more in this semester than I did in all 4 years of undergrad combined.
Yeah.
And I think more than anything, it made me realize like how much more I have to learn. Because if I saw a patient right now, I'd be terrified. I have no idea what to do. You know, I can take a history and physical, but beyond that, I can't really do anything. But yeah, I definitely, it's interesting that they're doing that. I think Duke Medical School actually does all their preclinical education in just 1 year. And they have a 4 year program, but I think one of the years they just have a year off and they can do whatever program they want. So I know that they've already compressed all their preclinical information to 1 year, but I think it's an interesting experiment. I think with certain students, maybe they just are choosing very select students who are maybe already know exactly what specialty they want to do. And also, I'd assume someone who went into that program would be a non-traditional, someone who is a little more figured out exactly what they want to do in life, is a little more mature and has, you know, the study skills and maturity to handle that workload. Because I think when I looked at it, you don't have summers. You just go straight through and you have very short breaks and you just do everything really quick, which is nice if you want to finish on time. But I think taking those breaks, you know, really helps mentally. I found that this winter break has been really nice. I mean, I was feeling a little burnt out at the end of the semester, just studying, you know, X amount of hours every day. It's nice to have a couple weeks to kind of decompress. And now I'm probably going to regret saying this, but I'm ready to get back to school.
I'm regretting.
I feel mentally refreshed for the next semester.
Yeah. And that's what it's there for. It's so you do decompress and get refreshed and can hit the ground running for the next semester and soak up everything that there is. And I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I'm always open for change. And obviously 3 years will help increase the number of physicians that are coming out. But my biggest question is, how are they going to determine how well it's working? Obviously test scores, but I mean, you can cram for a test and do well on it, but when they get into residency and their internship and all of a sudden that information has to come out quickly and they don't have time to look it up, is that information actually ingrained or did they just learn it for the test and then it's flushed out? So I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. I just wanted to ask because I thought that was a good question based on the information about how much studying there is. And it really, there's a ton. Unfortunately.
And I think it'll take a long time before they can even evaluate. Like you said, it seems like that's something that you can't really measure the intangibles in terms of whether they get that. So I think it's a good experiment with people who know exactly what they want to do and have the maturity for it. But I think it'll be years before we can determine if this can be a more systematic thing we do with more students.
Yeah.
But I think in general, for the vast majority of students, I don't think a 3 year track is right for them.
So you came straight from undergrad. You didn't take any time off.
No, just the few months of summer break.
Okay. After going through your first semester, do you wish you would have taken some time off?
A little bit yes and no. The things that make me wish I'd taken a little time off are some of my classmates who are a little bit older. The majority of my classmates are older. I think the average age is about 25 or 26. So I think seeing them and talking to them and kind of them telling me what they did, you know, in the years off made me wish I'd kind of traveled a little bit more or did this or did that. But, you know, we're all kind of here at the same point right now. And I actually, you know, the times that I wish I'd taken some time off are the times when it gets like really stressful. But now that I've kind of gotten to the groove of things and I really like all my classmates. The camaraderie we have at our class is really nice. So I actually really enjoy that. And even though, you know, studying sucks, we like find ways to make it better. So I know that I had a really great experiences in undergrad that made me very sure that this is what I wanted to do as a career. So I'm actually, you know, I'm glad I'm at the next stage right now, because this is what I knew I was ready for the next stage when I left undergrad. But I mean, definitely I think about it just because the path to become a physician after you start medical school is so long. It's another couple years of school and then however many years of residency, and it all kind of seems set in stone. But I know that I have, you know, a lot of time afterwards to kind of figure things out.
Yeah. What did you major in?
I majored in microbiology at UC Santa Barbara, and I actually, I'm really glad I did. I took some really great classes in micro, in virology, immunology, and that's actually the next kind of class we have is like an infectious disease class in immunology. So I'm hoping that will come into play a lot because I remember when I was taking anatomy, I'd never taken anatomy before. So that was actually, that made it really difficult. But by the time we got to our like biochem classes, I had taken those as part of my major. So that actually really helped a lot. So definitely it helps a lot to take those classes beforehand.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I posted that on one of your posts.
Yeah.
About your tips to surviving anatomy, because I was an exercise physiology major and took a lot of anatomy classes. And I think that having that base knowledge just helps so much. And I've seen the opposite suggestion from other people saying there's no point in taking anatomy in undergrad. You're going to take it at a much higher level in medical school. But I disagree with that. But that's my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, I don't think it's mandatory for you to like actually get it. I mean, I know a lot of people that did well. I did fine. I didn't do like amazingly well, but I know a lot of people that did amazingly well and had an easier transition, especially because a lot of schools do anatomy first. I think taking anatomy in undergrad will kind of help ease that transition into medical school. So, and I saw the contrast when I got to biochem. And I knew stuff that my classmates who had taken anatomy before hadn't studied before. And all of a sudden, the roles were reversed. And, you know, no one really needed to take it in order to pass. Everyone, you know, vast majority of people passed. But if you want to do really well and kind of ease that transition, it might help to take anatomy beforehand.
Yeah. So you're a blogger. How did you start blogging?
Well, it's a great question. It's kind of an interesting story because I during my sophomore year, I think it was either my sophomore or junior year of undergrad, I'd been doing all the, you know, normal stuff that pre-meds do, volunteer in a hospital, start research, all the other checklist things that you see. And I wasn't really feeling inspired or anything. I wasn't feeling anything that I was really passionate about. I mean, I had an inkling that I wanted to be a physician, and I figured, you know, this is kind of the career path I wanted to go down to, but there wasn't a lot of creative outlets per se for me to pursue. And actually I'd been reading Cal Newport's blog, what is it called? Study Hacks.
Mm-hmm.
And his blog is actually the reason that I'm even in medical school in the first place, is because he has great, just really the best kind of study strategies and skills that of any website I've seen. And kind of his blog inspired me to start writing a little bit about it. And I had seen a couple other pre-med and medical student bloggers, and Steve over at mdjourney.com had been following his blog for a while. And I figured, you know, this is kind of a chance for me. I didn't know that many great pre-med blogs, so I figured I'd start my own. And it was a bit of a learning curve at the beginning, just because, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I was really just writing. I wasn't sure if anyone wanted to read what I was writing. So I experimented with a lot of different kind of posts, just general studying posts, and then pre-med posts. And eventually I kind of found my niche in documenting the application process, because I found that a lot of people, a lot of pre-meds love kind of reading that. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet, especially in some forums, about, you know, what you should or what you shouldn't be doing. And I wanted to reach out to people that are just, you know, kind of average pre-meds like me that didn't have, you know, the best grades, but were looking for ways to kind of optimize their application. So I documented all the different things I did, like how I wrote a personal statement, you know, the different ways I prepared for my interviews, how I have this post called How to Write a Cover Letter to Ask for a Letter Recommendation. And that is, I think, my most viewed post on Practical Premed. I mean, people love that. I just made this generic format of this cover letter I sent to all my professors to ask for letters of rec. And I found that people really like having things like that because they don't know. There's no, you know, how-to book on how to do things like that. So it's been a great experience. I loved writing for Practical Premed. And then when I got into medical school, I figured I'd start a new website because I wasn't a pre-med anymore. And that's how White Coat DO came out about. And now that's where I'm blogging at. And I really enjoy the experience because I'm able to network with other bloggers, other just cool people in healthcare, social media like yourself. And that's really the best thing that I've gotten out of it is the ability to meet people that, you know, I've never met in person, but I've formed like great relationships with people online that are interested in the same things.
Yeah, and it's not only the benefit to yourself, which is great, and I think the relationships, and I talk about this a lot, the fact that you need relationships in life to get into medical school, to get into residency, and to get jobs and stuff, but the relationships that you're building, but also the information that you're putting out, because there is so much misinformation out there, and that was one of the reasons that I wanted to start my website. I just was kind of sickened at how much misinformation is out there, and there's a ton of great information out there, but a lot of it is hard to find. It's hard to read. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you know, most of the information out there is on like Student Doctor Network, which I mean, you can go digging through a ton of forms and find some good information, but a lot of it's junk, in my opinion.
Definitely. And it's hard in anonymous forums and things like that when you don't really have a verified or credible name to it. And I know a lot of people blog anonymously, but I really like placing my name on my blog and who I am. I think it forces me to really triple and quadruple check what I'm writing, making sure everything's professional. And you know, I think when people see who is writing something, they're better able to gauge like whether or not they trust it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's important. And it lets people trust you a lot more.
Yeah, definitely.
So it seems like one of your more popular posts and one of the posts that I liked a lot on Practical Pre-Med was your post about the MCAT. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your MCAT prep.
Oh man, that was a while ago. It feels like after the first semester of medical school, I kind of pushed all of those other things out of my mind, but I'll try to rehash it. I took the MCAT my junior year.
Which is
so
normal,
what I did was I studied for it during the summer between my sophomore and junior year. But then I realized I wasn't ready at the end of the summer. So I delayed it until my spring break at towards the middle of my junior year. And what I did was I just took a really light winter quarter schedule, and I tried to switch off studying for classes while also doing that. Looking back, I did all right on it. I got at the bottom of the range of what I said without having to retake it. But definitely, I would recommend people taking it to definitely do it while they're not in school or doing anything else, maybe working like a part-time job, but definitely when studying for the MCAT, it should be your number one kind of concern. I mean, I look at how I'm studying now and I realize that if I had studied for the MCAT like I studied during medical school now, I would have done exponentially better because I had no idea what like hard studying meant. But in terms of prep for the MCAT, I took the Kaplan MCAT course, the group class that they have, and I really enjoyed it. I thought the materials they provided us were really good. What I did was I took the course during the summer, and because I'd gone into every class and I had done all the assignments, and I told them I didn't feel I was ready, they gave me the option to either take the class again or just have access to the online materials, and I said, I'll just have the online materials. So that's how I studied for it during during while I was taking classes, but I think their materials are really good. I'd say for the people that like studying on their own, I found that a lot of my peers who did really well use exam crackers a lot. So that would be, if you're a self-studier, that would be my recommendation. But if you like the kind of the schedule, then maybe go for an MCAT course through Kaplan.
Okay. So you took the group course, so you're going to the class. How did you like your teacher? Was the teacher okay?
Yeah, the teacher was actually really great. He was a lot of the teachers that they use are people who recently took the MCAT, and he is this really smart guy. He's going to UCLA Med School now, and he scored a 36, and to him that was a horror story because he took like 5 cups of caffeine the day before the exam, and he said he like totally crashed on the first section, but somehow saved himself enough to do a 36, which my eyes is just unbelievable.
poor baby.
But the thing is, like, he knew his stuff really well, so it was good. I think it's really beneficial to have someone who really knows their stuff for the MCAT and can do well in it teaching you, because they kind of know all the small tricks. I mean, I wrote in my post how it's kind of like a mental game. You have to get just the endurance of being able to take the test, and also kind of the little tricks along the way you have to get. There's so many small things you have to get into it.
Yeah, and I'll go into that in a second. But why did you, at the end of your course, why didn't you think you were ready for it?
It was based off the practice test I was taking.
Okay.
I took a couple practice tests, and I knew there was a couple gaps in my knowledge that I didn't have. That I needed to fill. So I decided that I didn't feel comfortable taking the exam yet. When I started studying, I set, you know, a certain goal in terms of where I wanted to get. And I wasn't, I was about a couple points away from that at the end of the semesters, at the end of the summer. So I told myself I'd use that kind of that extra time to, study a little bit more during the, school year.
Okay. And studying more during the school year, were your scores going up on the practice test?
Yeah, I was actually doing really well on practice exams a couple weeks before the exam. I'll tell you what, I think I should have taken a couple days before the exam to taper off a lot more. I mean, I found myself, I built so much pressure up on myself for the exam. I was like, this is it. Like, you know, I didn't have an amazing GPA. I didn't have a terrible one, but I knew that my MCAT score would be a big determinant in, you know, whether or not I got into school. So I placed just a lot of pressure on myself, and I ended up studying so hard the week before the exam. And I think that just made myself a little more phased out than I should have been. And I ended up getting a score that was in the range I wanted it to be in, but it was towards the lower end of the range. So definitely, if I could have done it again, I would have tapered off and maybe relaxed a little bit more in the 2 or 3 days before the exam.
What'd you get on the test?
Oh, yeah, I got a 30 on the exam.
Okay, a great score. What were you scoring the last practice test that you were doing?
I was getting on the practice exams 34s, about 33 to 34.
Wow.
So my goal when I started studying was to hit a 36.
Okay.
And I wanted to get in that 30 to 36 range. And a couple of practice exams, it's kind of weird because the Kaplan practice exams aren't that great of indicators of scores like more above 33, because they have a different grading curve. But the AMC tests are really great for actually gauging and being more predictive of the actual test. So I think, you know, being just really nervous kind of cost me a little bit. I really debated taking it again, but it was just this huge kind of mental thing for me to go through. And I figured that, you know, I could either spend more time studying for the MCAT again, or I could put my energy into this extracurricular that I had that I really cared about. So I went with that route, and I don't regret it at all.
Okay. So you're a first year med student now at a mm-hmm. DO school.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a preference for DO or MD? Did you apply to a big mix in between the two?
Yeah, I applied to 30 schools in total. Wow. It was split about half. Yeah, it was a lot of schools. it was split about half, like half MD, half DO schools. My stats, my GPA was about a 3.5. And so with a 3.5 and a 30 MCAT, that put me about as average as they come. So I figured I'd apply to a very wide range of schools. And I knew I would wanted to be either an MD or DO just because a lot of the mentors I had in undergrad were MDs. But growing up, my uncle was actually a DO. And actually growing up, I thought all physicians were DOs. So for a while, it didn't really make a difference to me just because I had role models that were both MDs and DOs. And the way that it worked out in the application cycle, I got about 8 or 9 interview requests, and I went to about 6 of them. I went to 6 of them, and I ended up choosing Western. Western to me was the best school that I got into just because combination of location and then academics and other things. I'm from Southern California, so the fact that Western was in Southern California was probably the biggest factor for me.
Okay. Where are you from?
I'm from Huntington Beach, actually. Okay. Orange County.
Okay. I'm from Redondo Beach.
Oh, nice. Yeah, right by.
Very close. All right. So, you had talked a little bit earlier about some of these mental tricks to the MCAT.
Mm-hmm.
I've said a couple times, I think, on some different podcasts that there was this big study done in 2008 that showed that knowledge-based questions on the MCAT are few and far between. It's more comprehension and I can't think of the other word, but it's a lot of comprehending and putting together kind of what they're asking and then figuring out the answer from that. It's not strict knowledge-based stuff.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of mental tricks that you're talking about, or what kind of mental tricks did you find that the MCAT's about?
Yeah, that's part of it. I think in my post I talked a lot about kind of creating, doing the practice test exactly the same way. One of the things I tried to do was I scheduled, because my exam was 8 in the morning, I try to take all my practice exams the same way I would take my actual exam. You know, the night beforehand, I would get a good night's sleep, and then I would wake up at the same time I wanted to, try to eat the same breakfast, and try to get into like this routine of when I did practice exams, and really try to do everything the same way. Although the one thing that I did skip was a writing section. I never practiced a writing section until a week beforehand, because I knew that that's something that they never looked at, and they're eliminating that in the next year. So, I mean, no one ever looked at that. Someone told me this formula of the way you should write the sentences, and I got a decent enough score on that. So that's something that I always skip.
Yeah. No more writing sections, so who cares?
I think the act of kind of practicing it like you would take it is a big thing. And then also I talked in the post a little bit about kind of approaching it more of like as a game and realizing there's certain ways to do things. Like you were saying, you know, there's so much information that the MCAT test on that it'd be, you know, almost pointless to try to memorize everything. And it's more important to understand the concepts and know how to apply different concepts to questions. I think I should have spent a little more time practicing that. I would have gotten a higher score if I had done that.
Okay. When you sat down for the test, would you actually time yourself and sit there for the full 5, 6, 7, 8 hours?
Oh, yeah. Those were the worst. The first time I took a practice exam, I came home with just a splitting headache because I'd never really sat down and taken a test for that long. I mean, now I study for longer than that. But before then, as an undergrad, I'd go to a coffee shop that was nearby, and I sat at a table and I took that exam for about 5 or 6 hours. And then when I left, the coffee shop owner was just baffled that I'd been sitting there for that long. But yeah, I took the whole 5 to 6 hour test about once every few weeks.
Okay. What are you interested in going into? Do you know?
I don't have a specific preference yet. I had a lot of mentors that were in emergency medicine, internal medicine, and family medicine. So that's kind of where I'd see myself going right now, because that's why, you know, when I decided to become a physician, it's because of these people and, you know, kind of the examples that they set. But I have no exposure to surgical field, so I don't know. I don't even know if I'd be interested in that. So that's why I'm open to anything. But definitely, I'd love to get into things that involve public health. I'd love to write as a part of my medical career, and also maybe pursue things in like healthcare information technology and things like that. So I don't know specialty wise, but I know kind of what I do on the side.
As hobbies.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you're about to go back to your second semester of your first year. Mm-hmm. What classes are you going back into, and how does your school structure its curriculum? Is it systems based or is it more traditional?
Yeah, so Western U does systems based. The first semester is kind of a intro to kind of the basis of medicine. So we do medical gross anatomy, a 12-week block, and then we do the molecular and cellular basis of medicine as an 8-week block. So the first semester is just getting all the anatomy and all the molecular and cellular basis of medicine kind of grounded. And then after that, now this next semester, the first class we're taking is a infectious disease and immunotherapies class. And then after that, we take blood and lymph. And then after that, we take neuro. So after that first semester, now we're approaching a more traditional systems base where we go all those different things. I know second years do renal, they do respiratory and things like that. So after the first semester, we switched to more of a systems base. But definitely for the first semester, I'd say it's more traditional.
Okay. And for people listening that don't know, and I wish I knew this going in, and again, another reason why I do this, so mm-hmm. other people know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. My medical school, New York Med, didn't do a systems based. And I think I would have done better at systems based because it helps integrate all the information together at one time instead of taking pharmacology as a separate course and physiology as a separate course. Mm-hmm. You're studying the cardiac system and you learn the anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, pathology. You're learning it all at the same time. And I think that helps, at least for my studying, that would have helped me. So was that a determination in where you wanted to go to school, or did you not think about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. That was one of the things I thought about. I mean, when it came down to it, a lot of physicians told me, you know, medical school is medical school. It doesn't really, don't get bogged down in the different, you know, learning curriculums that they have. But definitely between some schools I was deciding on, some schools did it more of a traditional base, and I really like that Western did a systems base, especially as you get closer to step one, the first board exam you have to take. Because I know in just the first aid for step one, that's the way they organize it. And I think I haven't taken step one yet, but from what I've heard, it's a better way to learn those concepts, is to think about everything from the anatomy, the physiology, the pharmacology, and not just isolate everything. Because when you get those questions, and again, I haven't taken the exam, but I'd assume when you get those questions, they're a little more complex than just, you know, straightforward, what is X, Y, or Z?
Yeah, they're not that straightforward. Unfortunately, no test from here on out will be straightforward for you. Unfortunately. All right, so your systems based, what are you doing in your summer in between first and second year? Do you know what you're doing yet?
I'm actually still figuring that out. There's lots of different possibilities right now. Right now is actually when I'm figuring that out. There's a couple, our school offers, or more, they tell us about different opportunities that are available. There's some research opportunities for us, as well as other things. I'm definitely going to apply to, a few research positions. I think, there's a couple gaps in my like research experience that I'd like to fill. Definitely, if I could have gone back in undergrad, I would have done a little more research, just because I didn't do that much as an undergrad. And I'm starting to see that it might hurt me right now, just because if I wanted to get a research position, it's hard for me to compete against people that may have had more research experience as an undergrad. But where I did have experiences in undergrad and like service experiences and things like that, that's where I might also explore. So maybe clinical opportunities abroad, or maybe trying to explore public health options as well here in the States. But I have no concrete plans yet, but that's definitely one of my priorities for the next month to figure out.
Okay. What's one of the biggest things you know now that you wish you knew starting the whole process?
That I would make it through. I think...
That you would make it through.
Yeah, that I would make it through.
Okay,
I
think so having the really, confidence.
Yeah. I think really the first month was a really just a struggle just mentally, just because I'd never taken anatomy before, as adjusting to a new school. I mean, it's stressful, like moving to a new place, having a whole new social group, this whole new everything, you know, a new living situation. And on top of that, adjusting to the volume of medical school just being thrown at you. I think that was really stressful. There's numerous times where I would stare at my Netter's book and just think, you know, can I really do this? Or like, if I drop out right now, I won't lose too much money. Like, there's so many times I just really thought about it. But I think looking back, it's a little, you know, those thoughts were a little silly, but I think a lot of people dealt with that, and definitely talking to my classmates, I think pretty much everyone, you know, struggles with those kind of same doubts, because it's hard. It's not impossible, but it's hard. So I think I mean, it's hard for anyone to know that they will make it through. But if I could somehow talk to myself a couple months ago and be like, everything's going to be all right, just relax, keep on studying, you'll be fine.
Yeah. And you did fine. You made it through.
Yeah, I'm fine. So
awesome. Well, you have any other words of wisdom for any of our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I really picked up from just pre-med and medical school and blogging in general is just not be afraid to go after things if you really want them. I think like I was talking about with medical school, but also with blogging, like there's a lot of times I wasn't sure if I was actually doing anything to help people. And, you know, I think just really putting out content there and then guest blogging in other people's websites and just getting in contact with people. And eventually people started reading my site, and I'd get emails from people that would, you know, thank me for helping them, even though I'd never met them before. And that was a really cool feeling. You know, people would say, oh, I've been following your blog for this long and it's helped me so much, and I really want to thank you. I think things like that really make a difference. So if, you know, for any pre-meds or anybody else who's kind of feeling down about the whole process, you know, there's so many outlets you can pursue to, you know, really kind of reinvigorate yourself and kind of make something that makes it all worth it.
Yeah. Where can people find your website?
So my website is whitecoatdo.com. That's the website I blog at right now. And if you're looking for any pre-med advice, I documented essentially my whole application process on practicalpremed.com. So you can find, and there's links to both websites on either way. So okay. If you want to contact me, there's contact things there as well. And I usually answer emails when I'm not studying, which is... far and few between, but I try to get to them.
Wow, great information there from Ryan from whitecoatdo.com. I also want to thank the gentleman that emailed in the question. If you have a question that you would like to ask us, just go to medicalschoolhq.net and click on the contact tab. I would prefer you call in a question. That way I can play it here on the podcast so I don't have to read to everybody. The number here is 617-410-6747. For all the topics that we covered today, you can find the show notes at medicalschoolhq.net/session9. Oh, and if you haven't already done so, if you could go into iTunes, and if you like us, go ahead and give us a 5-star rating and leave us a good solid review. The way iTunes works is they rank us higher in their algorithms the more people that subscribe to us and give us good ratings. So if you could do that, that lets more people find us and spread the knowledge. That's our goal here at the medical school headquarters. I hope the information provided today will help better guide you on your path to becoming a physician. Make sure to join us next time here at the medical school headquarters.